My name is Martha Joseph. I'm a senior art history major, and I will be talking about Bridget Riley's print, Elapse, done in 1982. Made in the latter half of her career, it nonetheless is characteristic of her body of work in its streamlined geometric abstraction. Riley uses undulating lines in three different colors, yellow, blue, and pink, to create a two-dimensional pattern that seems three-dimensional. Her work exploits visual effects by placing two colors side by side. The contrast created by this stark juxtaposition creates an optical illusion. Many of her works seem to pulse, flicker, or vibrate. In this work, it appears as if these lines are moving across the page. This virtual movement gives her work a great sense of dynamism. Also, when standing at a fair distance, the viewer may see the inclusion of green and purple in the image. However, that illusion is created by the three primary colors combining to create secondary colors. Op art, an abbreviation for optical art, is the term used to refer to these paintings that exploit the illusions or optical effects of perceptual processes. The term op art was first used by critic John Borgsinner in an article in Time magazine published on the 23rd of October, 1964. However, Riley herself was quick to challenge the notion that her work is exclusively about optics. She claimed, "I have never consciously based any work on a scientific principle, nor studied optics as such. I personally dislike the term optical painting because it implies that optics are the raison d'être of the work." Op art drew much success in the mid-60s, especially in New York. Born in London in April of 1931, Riley began her studies in Britain at Goldsmiths College and the Royal College of Art. Her early work was influenced greatly by Impressionist and Pointillist painters such as Seurat, whose focus was on creating a grand visual effect by painting groups of small dots on a canvas. Seeing as Riley became a huge success in a predominantly male art world, it is important to consider her place as a female artist. Many of her female contemporaries were creating work that dealt directly with the female body or with women's political issues. Riley refused to be included in that category of female artists. In fact, she published a short essay in 1973 in which she dismissed political feminism as having no viable relationship to women making art. She even controversially referred to such feminist art as hysteria. Such reactionary comments come as an unfortunate surprise to many of us today, especially because Riley experienced her share of sexism from critics, teachers, curators, collectors, and other artists alike. Though Riley claims that her gender had little to do with the production of her art, it had everything to do with the reception of her art. Publicity photos presented her as a vixen, standing coyly in classic fashion model pose. Even her art itself was feminized. The greatest example of the feminization of op art is its appearance in much of the women's fashion of the 1960s. The appearance of Riley's patterns on designer dresses came as a shock to the artist. In 1965, after the first op art exhibition at the MoMA in New York, collector Larry Aldrich purchased one of her black and white works, took the pattern to Maxwell Industries, and commissioned the company to produce a textile of it. Aldrich did all of this without first consulting Riley. He eventually invited her over to his house for a surprise and presented her with simple dresses made out of the fabric. Contrary to Aldrich's expectations, Riley was not pleased. She felt like it was a violation of copyright and felt like her work had no place in the fashion industry. Despite her disapproval, the dresses were widely circulated and only contributed more to the op art movement's pop culture success. Though there is no concrete evidence that Riley's gender influenced Aldrich's actions, it is not implausible that he assumed that a woman would automatically approve of marketing her art as a fashion statement. It is this relationship between high art and consumer culture that allows us today to be able to address her work with more insight and complexity than that of many of her male contemporaries. Thank you for listening to this podcast. And be sure to check the Allen Memorial Art Museum's website for more additions to this series.